and Belcher, the police department, Dick Wilson, city manager's office, Barisoni, all these people tell them, these $100,000 a year executives who run things have the final word. They run the city council. The city council doesn't really run what goes on.
You know, I think that there's a certain, part of what you're saying, there's a lot of truth, certainly post after election, certainly you're right on that. But where I think you might be a little bit off is that even though that the press, would turn their attention on, a scapegoating you, I still think that there would be more value in that as opposed to us, not running anybody, staying silent.
Well, Steve Argue ran last time and tried to do that. He actually was a homeless candidate, and he was a man who had been jailed, and served 7 months in jail for essentially, I think, bogus charges. Yes, he did slug Officer Lefebvre, but, it's a question of whether if a police officer had done the same thing and Argue had been doing what Lefebvre was doing, which is to say menacing a woman and child under the color of law, I think that, as was later shown to be, when the excessive force complaint was upheld against Lefebvre. So, I mean, Argue tried this whole thing, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be tried again. It needs to be tried again, but again, the focus has to be on the issues. And for that to happen, there has to be some kind of organization created that pushes those issues, renter issues, civil rights issues, restore land to public control issues, restore government to public control. And that's more than what one person can do, more than what Huff can do. I mean, Huff is a teeny tiny organization, somewhat seasonal even. And we do what we can. One of the problems with running for city council is it would take away from the ability to do other things too. So it would require, I think, a lot more people involved. And I'm not saying that it couldn't necessarily be done, but right now my thought is that there'd be there's better ways to spend one's energy. I hear what you're saying, that it's
a counter argument against that, Robert.
Yes.
Why not have the campaign, complement, the work of Huff, and at the same time, I think it would be important to see how many votes in the city of Santa Cruz Robert Norris can get. I think that's an important question.
I certainly was elected second worst villain in the metro, and I have been elected the most irritating individual for several years running, and then I dropped to the silver and then to the bronze, so it's hard to tell. But I don't know. I mean, that would be, as long as it didn't take away from other stuff, would be the primary thing. But the trouble is, city council campaigns are very grueling, time-consumptive kind of things. And the issue is always, if you're not a serious candidate, why should people vote for you anyway? And if you are a serious candidate, where's the money and where are the real changes you're going to make? That's my counter-argument.
Okay. Well, first of all, if anybody did vote for you, it would be because of the issue, because they would be able to see all, they'd be able to see through all the junk. And two, I would like to know, and I think it's important for the movement to know, is how many people in Santa Cruz, can see through that junk. I think that's a real important question for our, for our organizing ability to some degree.
Yeah, well, one way you could do it is simply put my name on the ballot, and then I just not show up at the various debates and just do what I normally do. I mean, provided it doesn't distort the kind of activist work that I think needs to be done, I suppose that would be a possibility. But it's a real tar baby, that city council situation. First of all, it institutionally destroys those who get into it, I think. I mean, Rotkin was once an activist. Look at him now. Crone, to some extent, was a potential activist. Look at him now. It's a sad situation. And, I mean, it does nasty things to people, the city council, when they get involved. Not that I'd ever win. I mean, that's not it. But Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I'd like to really urge you, you know, to take a second look at this, Robert.
Mm.
And finally, I want to change to shift the topic.
Cool.
The finally, Robert, is that I really, really, from the bottom of my heart, I truly urge you, you know, to stop with the negative words in front of different folks. And let me explain why.
Mm-hmm.
I think that your characterization, you know, 99% of the time, I agree, you know, with your characterization. However, I think that it probably turns off more folks than it turns on more folks. And thirdly, it takes the focus, we want to focus more on how the system, you know, fucks people up.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much, you know, on how individuals, you know, play in that system. You know, it's better to show how the system fucks up, and if you can do it, you know, in terms of clearly explaining that to people, I think we're going to be a lot more effective.
What kinds of characterizations are you talking about? Be specific. What
you know, you all use those little siphons, you know, like emperor, crone, and those little words.
Mm-hmm. Pure, crone, yeah.
Whatever, you know, you do that.
Oh, yeah.
It's no, and I'm urging you know, to reconsider
uh-huh.
that, and I think if you were to shift, I think that our work would advance far beyond our dreams.
Huh. Well, yeah, I appreciate your thoughts, Bernard. I mean, you know, I think that the issues are more important than individuals. On the other hand, particularly politicians and bureaucrats, it's really important to demystify them, and that's one of the values of that kind of language. People can laugh at them. And this is what's been done by cartoonists and satirists and essayists sort of throughout history, and I think it's a tradition that it's an honorable one, and I continue to do it, and also it, you know, it gives me some of the strength to go on. I mean, it's, you know, you got to laugh at these people for what they're doing, and one of the ways to laugh at them is to satirize and lampoon them, and
yes,
that's what I do.
Yes, you know, I understand that that's one style,
mm-hmm.
you know, but me and I've talked to other people, I'm not alone,
mm-hmm.
you know. We, for the most part, the people I've talked to agree with your characterization. However, we feel repulsed, you know, and we feel turned off. And I just would really like you to know that there's another point of view.
Sure, and I appreciate your candor about that. And I would encourage others to call in if they want to discuss this subject. How wonderful am I? Should I run for office? But more important, you know, this, as you're saying, these issues about... Is calling Crone Fuhrer Crone or Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, which sounds much more kind of has more of a ring to it, a bad idea? Anyway, thank you for calling in, Bernard.
Thank you, Robert, for your time.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, and it's also your time, so use it. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. It's 11:05. May look like 10:05, but you got to set those clocks ahead. It's daylight savings time. We're heading into the summer, or at least into the spring. So give it a try. 427-3772 is the phone number here. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. So, hey. Make it your free radio station and call in with your thoughts. I'm going to, as I was saying before that last call, go back to an interview that I had with David Bush of Santa Monica. Santa Monica is a place where there was a lot of homeless activism in the 80s and 90s, a really powerful and committed and unusual city attorney, Robert Myers, who actually put together a relatively mellow vehicular sleeping law, which I guess it required people to move from where they were sleeping in their vehicles if there was a complaint within, I think it's 10 or 20 minutes of the complaint, but didn't allow for tickets. And it also barred them from sleeping, I think, in residential areas on the street. And it didn't, you know, it apparently hasn't produced any problems. So one wonders why there was, you know, such hysteria, as some would say, and others might not, around the issue of the safe sleeping zones 2 years ago. Of course, the madness and the frenzy and the bigotry came from people like Rotkin and Hernandez on the council, and the Santa Cruz Chronicle's misreporting, and Catherine Byers' fearful fumbling, perhaps because of West Side nervousness, even though it wasn't directed at the West Side at all. I mean, it wasn't even involved. This was two industrial zones, Mission Extension and the Harvey West Park. But what I'm about to play for you is a Santa Monica activist, David Bush, who's down there. I ran into him a couple months ago. Before I do, however, here's this phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Comment from the peanut gallery again.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, you nutcase. Go ahead.
Hey, I really like Bernard, right? I really do.
Uh-huh.
And I really like what Bob LaMonica has to say. I've never met the man.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, you know, Robert having to change Robert, and Robert shouldn't characterize and do caricatures, and, you know, that's like, it's like, let's marginalize Robert, let's focus on Robert, let's blame Robert. If Robert wasn't Robert, you know, that's not the problem. You know, Robert sees the lies, Robert pulls covers, thank God it's Robert. If this town didn't have Robert Norris, this town would be the piece of shit that it really is. That's my opinion.
I am the salvation and the light, I agree.
Well, you know, enough ass crack licking, but, you know, it's like, you know, it's not Robert. Robert's just exposing the fucking dirty shit, you know? It's like, and these people, you know, my opinion is, my perception, these people are trying to marginalize Robert, and it's got like some little vile little clique that, you know, let's not talk to Robert, let's not let Robert know. It's like,
Remember,
it's self-defeating.
Well, Ed, remember that Bernard is certainly not trying to marginalize me. He believes that,
No.
Yeah, Bernard believes that by being, you know, acting differently, by not
right.
characterizing council members as Führers or fascists or, you know, flunkies, those are the bad words that the city council is, you know, barred at its council chambers, at least a flunky and a Führer under Fitzmaurice. Use those words to get thrown out. That somehow we get more respectability, or at least it's not so much respectability. People will listen to our arguments more effectively, and there is a sense in which if you avoid all the personalities and keep focusing on the issues, that's an important thing to do. I mean, there is a style that is. I mean, Martin Luther King, for example, was not into satirizing his opponents. I think
no,
you know, he'd use an entirely different style.
And we know what Malcolm X thought of that.
Right, and Malcolm X had his style. So, I mean, everybody has their own style and approach, what we need, of course, are people using different styles pursuing the same objectives. I'd love to see a Martin Luther King figure arise in Santa Cruz to do a civil rights movement. I'm not a Martin Luther King, you know. I'm not a Malcolm X. I'm who I am, as you point out. That doesn't mean I can't, you know, take criticism, hopefully, and change. Who knows? I'm getting pretty old, but we'll see.
I don't know. I've kind of overheard some stuff. I thought you took criticism pretty damn well myself.
As defensive as the next guy, and I tend to also, you know, I'm kind of you can be paranoid because when they're out to get you, you get paranoid.
And just because you think somebody's not out to get you, it doesn't mean that they ain't.
Right. And so and then if they are out to get you, then you tend to be more paranoid in circumstances than you should be because there are real concerns you have as well as the imaginary ones.
Right. And the real ones are the ones to be worried about.
Right, although I'm police are not arresting me. I'm not on trial on trumped up drug charges. Police have never beaten me up in Santa Cruz. I've not been, you know, abused that way. And to some extent, it's how I think because of how I deal with police. And to some extent, maybe it's because they think I'm marginal already and why bother, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, that's just something I detected a while back. Let's blame Robert. If only Robert would change, and if only Robert wouldn't say this and that. That's got nothing to do with anything in the scheme of things. That's my opinion.
Right. Now, but you've got
to
be...
But I had one little funny to say.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to tell Bernard if Robert became a city councilman, he'd forget where he came from. Me and Bernard would be standing on the corner watching Robert drive by with, I don't know, 5-6 women in his brand new Cadillac, and Robert's hair blowing in the wind, and he wouldn't even know us, Bernard. He'd forget where he came from.
That's right.
Na 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 na.
I would have better things to do than you.
Take care.
Thanks. And this is the Robert Norris Fan Club here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Give us a call. You can leave your name at the door. We'll examine your stats. And another phone call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Do you live within the physical limits of the city of Santa Cruz?
I do not, so I'm not actually really even eligible to live in to run for city council. So much so, take that, Bernard. Actually, if someone wishes to donate a house for me to move into, we will consider that. Of course, it would have to have suitable facilities.
This campaign is getting expensive already.
Well, you know, you want to make sure that you get what you can out of it. This sounds like Becky Johnson to me.
Seriously, I think that when people run for office in town, it does often make the mistake of putting their own money into the campaign in a race that they're not likely to win unless they have the huge amounts of money that the people who actually win are able to put up. So, and then after they've lost, a lot of times they don't have the oomph to go on with the activism and the things that motivated them to run for office. I've just seen this pattern a lot, and it always concerns me when I see somebody running for office. I must say that Mike Schmidt, even though he lost his bid for the Board of Supervisors seat, did not wind up in debt at all from his campaign, and so he avoided that pitfall.
Well, I know that the activists who've run for city council, such as, like Phil Baer ran, Jane Baer ran, Linda Edwards ran back in 1988, Jane Himmler ran, didn't stop their activism. In fact, they used it. So that, you know, that's an argument that would say, well, you can still run for city council being
activist. Well, that was a unique time, don't you think, Robert, that we really haven't had much of that since?
It's true. There was a lot more people at city council, and really a lot of homeless people involved in the homeless civil rights struggle. Linda LeMaster ran for city council in 1992, but again, that was a time when Food Not Bombs was forming, and the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless was active. Again, not a lot of homeless people, but more than seemed to be involved now. So that's true.
Because, well, we see the trend. The people who win are the people that have the largest campaign chest.
And Steve Argue, I guess, ran in 2000, and he ended up leaving town. But I don't know. I mean, he just, he probably is. I'm not quite sure what his priorities are or what he's doing over in the Midwest.
He was originally from Minnesota, too.
Right. He was in his town for a while. It's hard to tell, and it's just, I think we have to keep our eyes on the issue. And if it seems that that's the way to put the issue forward, then that's something we should seriously consider. But just, you know, it's always, why don't you run for city council sort of thing, and you got to watch out for that kind of knee-jerk proposal, because it's, it takes a lot of energy away, and it's, well, for all the reasons we've discussed. I wonder, do you know anything about this Homeless Issues Working Group, Becky, that you were a part of, the Green Party Homeless Issues Working Group? It's meeting on Monday, is that right?
That's correct. Monday at 7 o'clock at the home of Carl Wilson.
What's the address there, for those who want to know?
It's on Felker Street.
It's on Felker Street?
Yeah.
Maybe you can find out what it is and let us know.
I
really appreciate it.
I used to have that memorized.
Yeah, I could probably look it up. But, I mean, that's 7 o'clock on Monday, tomorrow night.
Yeah, the Homeless Issues Working Group hasn't met in a while, and it is the committee of the Green Party that's been working on some of these issues.
Actually, that hasn't been working on some of these issues.
It's been a pretty long gap.
Yeah. But who knows? Maybe they'll start working on these issues again. It would be nice if they did.
So sort of Nick Whitehead and Linda LeMaster decided that the gap has been too long and time to hold another meeting. So they're putting it together. And so if anybody has any agenda items that they should pass them on to Linda LeMaster, and she's composing a master list that she'll bring to the meeting.
At 7 o'clock, again, do we have the address of that meeting? Sounds like you're working at a computer in the background. By the way, you do a TV program, Club Cruise. Is there something coming up this week on Club Cruise?
Let's see. We have a show Tuesday and Thursday on Channel 27. And we have our repeat show that we're putting on.
And what is that?
This one. It slips my mind at this moment.
Uh-oh.
I have that in front of me.
Okay.
So,
also want to announce that at noon today, that's in about an hour and a half, or actually about half an hour, because we are going on 11:20 now, the Campus Earth Festival is going to be held on campus at the Quarry Amphitheater at UC Santa Cruz. Guest speakers include Kevin Danaher, Kristen Casper, Fred Keeley, and Michael Brown. This is the Alumni Association of Porter College, College 8, Merrill College, and Kresge that's throwing it on. It's kind of sponsoring it, as well as a couple of other organizations. And the music, this is the main reason that interests me, will be done by La Paz of Los Angeles and Grito Serpentino of San Jose. Downtown, amen. As well as Strung Over Santa Cruz Bluegrass. So that's, again, 12 to 6 today, Quarry Amphitheater, the Campus Earth Festival. For those of you, it's a free event. There's going to be food, campus organizations. Check it out.
I think that's 137 Elkhurst.
So that's tomorrow at 7 o'clock, the Homeless Issues Working Group of the Green Party.
Now, I believe that people, if you're not a member of the Green Party, I think you're still welcome at this meeting. I think the only difference between people who are registered Green and those who are not is that registered Greens vote at the meeting, I think.
Right, and if you're, be sure to bring your registration with you and show your papers
yeah.
at the door.
Yeah, there's been a little...
Actually, I'm kidding about that, but there was a lot of... I was hassled for the Green Party registration issue endlessly, and it was a very unpleasant situation.
Yes, I know you had a tattered record with the Green.
They've had a tattered record with me.
Yeah.
I've done just fine, but hey.
Well, you know, we do have, you know, Tim Fitzmaurice is a member of the Green Party. He does come to meetings once in a while.
He does indeed. He even leads them and vetoes resolutions.
He'll show up to, you know, stand aside or to block.
He blocks those resolutions, particularly the homeless resolutions. Well,
yeah, he's
one
good
resolution.
For that.
So, anything else you want to report?
I hope people got up in time. So they sprung forward properly.
Hey, thank you.
All right.
And Free Radio Santa Cruz, thanks Becky Johnson, who is actually recording this show. These shows are recorded. We are archiving them in our fumbling fashion over at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. This Bathrop Spears Broadside show that you're listening to runs from 10 o'clock in the morning to 1:30 in the afternoon, and on Thursdays it's at 6 to 8 in the evening. And this has been going on more or less since... April 7th, 1995, and I can give you that date because I actually have the first radio broadcast in front of me here. Interestingly enough, I have pulled it from the archives, and I may, if you're all good out there, I may play you a nostalgic bit of the first Free Radio Santa Cruz Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which I think didn't even have the name at that point, but it was just me mouthing off from, I think the second place Free Radio ever broadcast from, or maybe it was the first. It was the first round at Campbell Street before the authorities tore down that building and created a nice lot. Not a parking lot, just a nice grassy lot that, of course, you can't camp on because that would be a violation of the camping ban. Anyway, give a call to 427-3772 here at Free Radio if you want to tune in. And let's hear, for the third time, I'll introduce it, David Bush of Santa Monica talking about activism down there. And some of you may have heard part of this tape, but you probably haven't heard all of it. And listen in, it's worth listening to.
Isn't there a law that criminalizes homeless people from sleeping on public property in Santa Monica?
Yeah. Santa Monica is one of the first, probably 10 cities in the country to pass an anti-camping law, which is an absurd thing because to apply a law against homeless people and call it a camping law is just absurd because no homeless person, this isn't camping, this is survival. But that's part of the denial of too many officials and Americans that's what we're engaged in, survival.
Is there violence against homeless people in Santa Monica in terms of either vigilante or police action? Have you got any stats on that or any sense of whether that's increasing or decreasing in the last year or two?
Well, you know, The only way I can answer that is being homeless is violence. And, I mean, that's the truthful answer to that. That's the real answer that we all know. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. The answer about things like the hate attacks that were, statistics on that were compiled by the National Coalition for the Homeless, I think they found last year there were 80 homeless murders or violent attacks where people were like set on fire in homeless hate crimes. Here in Santa Monica, there's no compiling of statistics on homeless hate crimes against homeless people. While there are statistics compiled about hate crimes against other people, we have, thankfully, no major hate crime that we know of. That doesn't mean, even though we have a homeless newspaper in the city, that we know that we can say for a fact that hasn't occurred, because, like in most communities, homeless papers are surviving by a handful of dedicated people.
Change was involved in some controversy 4 or 5 years ago, and it was struggling against what was perceived as competition locally, and perhaps even more ominously, a kind of a profound competition against homeless papers generally by the big issue, the London-based mega paper, which publishes every week and which is sold by homeless people in, I guess, 5 or 6 different large cities in the world. 3 of them in England, like 1 in South Africa, 1 in Australia, I'm not sure, but it's a worldwide paper with,
I think they're in the Netherlands too.
Netherlands now as well. You know, their paper, which is, they have been characterized differently, and I haven't been following them in recent years in any detail, I don't subscribe to them, but they were considered in 1997 when I went to the meeting of NASNA, North American Street Newspaper Association, a group that was essentially using homeless people to distribute and sell a product that essentially kind of ripped off the homeless, but also had a certain, you know, it used a certain glitz or a patina of concern for homeless people, but also was more into, you know, mainstream frills and stuff, you know, in public interest stories about Princess Di and that sort of thing. Anyway, they had a problem with, we had a problem with them coming into the country because we were afraid they were going to, in essence, supplant local homeless papers that were struggling, and also some of us were concerned that advocacy was our interest, not, you know, putting together a product that homeless people could sell, like pens or, you know, pencils or apples on the corner, you know, where they get a small percentage of the money, but rather changing the situation through spreading in news of the homeless struggle through print. And
yeah, Robert, if
I went on about that for some time, I apologize.
But you explained the situation well, and to put it simply, for anybody who wants to understand some of the root causes of homelessness in America, and people are always saying, well, why are people homeless in America? Why are you homeless in America? The whole controversy over the big issue is worth looking into, because it's a stark and egregious illustration of what causes homelessness in America. The big issue is a, quote, charity. And the question is, are charities solving homelessness in America, or are they perpetuating it? And if you look, and if you want to understand what homeless people say, will mean when they say that we don't want charity, we want justice, look at the big issue. The big issue is a global publishing empire being built on the backs of homeless slave labor. That's the fact. People, everybody understands today that you can own a multi-million dollar corporation that makes no money, but is worth billions of dollars if you walk into a bank and you sell nothing more substantial than a name. And the big issue is a gigantic growing charity foundation.
stay tuned. Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. You're listening to David Boosh in...
You were saying the big issue is... it's a brand name that's being built by the blood, the sweat, the suffering of homeless people throughout the world, so that a handful of people around its publishers and editors can have some cushy little yuppie jobs, and that the owners of the big issue, which remains clouded to this day, who it is who actually owns the trademark name, the big issue, can, when they choose to retire, if they want to sell a lifetime of work of homeless people suffering in pain to some media conglomerate like AOL Time Warner or Rupert Murdoch's sons, cash out for $1 billion or more. That's how you rip off homeless people for bleeding and dying in the streets, and you call it charity, and you raise millions of dollars, and you give 10 or 20% of it even to a foundation, while you steal 90% of a person's life.
Well, you know, it's pretty harsh words for John Bird, the founder and big cheese of the big issue, who perhaps well-deserved words. But here in Santa Monica, Making Change entered into a deal with the big issue 3 or 4 years ago because they were, there are a couple of factors involved. The several people in NASNA, North American Street Newspaper Association, were interested in getting the big issue into NASNA, and it may have actually gotten into NASNA or not. I'm not sure exactly what its status is. It sent people to the last NASNA conference in San Francisco last summer, and there's concern that it is surrogate papers in, like, in New York City that are involved here.
Let's delve into this a little bit more so that I can be really clear on this. The difference between charity and empowerment. Empowerment, it's not just in homeless newspapers, it's not just in homelessness, it's in America. Slave labor is when you are working for a company and you don't own that company. Shareholders own it, and they can sell you, they can sell your pension plan, they can sell your 401k. That's slave labor in the 21st century. And that's what they do in charity under the guise of charity. That's what they do in corporations under the guise of corporate profitability. And what they do in... And we've got to get straight in this country and on this planet. If you want to know what the solution is to homelessness on this planet, and probably half the people on this earth are homeless, half, according to the UN Program for Human Development, let's all realize this. Half the people in the world today are living on $2 a day or less. You tell me if they're not homeless. And if we're going to solve that in our lifetime, and we better, and we ought, because we finally have, everybody can see the ability to do so. We're going to have to get really clear on the concept. Workers own their labor, and the minute you steal it, you make people homeless. And as far as NASNA goes, NASNA needs to get that straight. The idea of, quote, homeless publishers or homeless newspaper builders in cities in America wanting to emulate the big issue model or make homeless newspapers more corporate professional, they're the enemies of homeless people in this country. That's the stand as a member of NASA I take.
Well, I'm hoping you're actually going to write something about that, David, because I think that you put it very well.
I will.
I will, and I'll try to make it even more succinct.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Good. Well, here in Santa Monica, I know there was a... the big issue decided to come into Los Angeles, and they didn't tell NASNA they were doing so, and they led people to think sort of the opposite. And then they set up base in Santa Monica, where it already had a homeless newspaper, Making Change, a much smaller weekly paper that I guess you've been involved with.
Yeah, Making Change. Making Change was begun about 4 years ago. It was built on the work of the man who founded the first homeless newspaper in Santa Monica, Len Doucette, who was a homeless man who founded a paper called Hard Times. times when Lindisat became so ill that he couldn't continue on after 4 years of doing hard times. Jennifer Wagner was invited to build on that foundation, and for the last 4 years she's attempted to expand and grow a homeless activist paper in LA, and it's been quite a struggle, and we've hashed out a lot of these debates not only within NASNA but within ourselves. When you engage in struggle, maybe the first thing you do is you figure out what you need to carry on the march and what you have to jettison on the march. And we've had homelessness an issue, become an issue in this country for people who are under the age of 30. You might be amazed to realize that 20 years ago, people, if you would have said, is there homelessness in America, people would have said no. So for the last 20 years, we've had to figure out who we are, how we're going to fight our battle, and that struggle continues today, and it's part of the formation of homeless newspapers, where a lot of these debates, what's really at stake, are realized.
What came up in these debates, and what decisions did you make?
Well, we sort of the issues again is how do you structure a corporation for justice? We believe generally the consensus is in the core group of people around the homeless newspaper making change that a cooperative economic structure in word and in deed and act helps fight homelessness rather than just giving people a few pennies so that they can make it through the day. It gives them ownership of their labor. And then we've looked at issues about media and what is the role of media in either propagandizing people or waking them up. And although it's not, you know, you just don't hear these debates just like you don't hear people like Howard Zinn, a historian, or Noam Chomsky, considered to be, by most of the world, America's most leading intellectual. You don't hear those debates in the popular media. But the most crucial debates around history and politics revolve around those kind of people. And some of the most crucial debates in media revolve around a person who's little heard of today, unfortunately, but Marshall McLuhan. And his research and proposals about what is the role of advertising in media, print, and electronic. And so what we've looked at is whether a homeless paper is fighting homelessness or perpetuating it by taking advertising. And what is it that people, when they read an advertisement, what does it hypnotize them into thinking? And does that does the message that goes with an ad in a homeless newspaper maybe undo everything that is said in the editorial side of the newspaper?
Give me an example of this.
Well, the simplest example is one I think we can all relate to. And Marshall McLuhan was a brilliant Canadian intellectual in the 60s who was chaired of Media Studies Department in Canada. Wrote several books, The Mechanical Bride, The Medium is the Massage, and others. And if you want to really understand media, read one of his books called Understanding Media. Or you want to begin to understand media from a real alternative perspective, that would be a great place to start. And to give you a quick example of one that we can all relate to, even if we haven't read McLuhan, it's very much something we all know. It's when you're, what do you know when your parents said to you when you were growing up, don't do as I do as I say? You immediately know that whatever advice they're giving you is bullshit because they can't even live by it. And excuse my language, but we all know that. So what are you saying when you say that the biggest problem in America is greedy corporate scumbags stealing from us all. And yet you run full page ads in a half or more of your paper taking money from these greedy corporate scumbags, not only taking money, but touting their worldview, touting their claim that their product is good, touting that creating a visual layout that entices people to see their activity is beautiful. Oh, here's a beautiful car in a beautiful setting. I'll give you a quick example about the big issue. Back in 96, when they were coming to LA and trying to bulldozer their way into the city without any homeless support.
On the other hand, Len Doucette did get on their payroll, as did Ted Hayes, as I understand. Both of them, Len, as you mentioned, the originator of Hard Times, and Ted Hayes, the founder of Justiceville, the Arco Richmond-backed homeless dome village, or Justiceville, as it's now called.
Yeah. Well, we're all on a path, Robert, and we all bring some knowledge to this movement, and Ted Hayes brought a lot of knowledge to LA in the 80s and the 90s, and any activist in this country who thinks that they do nothing wrong needs to get a primary grade education in life before they
criticize others.
Yeah.
So speaking as the principal stone thrower.
The reality is, yeah. This is a struggle. As we're saying here, this is a struggle in the homeless newspaper movement. Should homeless newspapers take ads? Should they take foundation support? At various times, people shift their viewpoints on these issues. I'm sorry, I lost my place. I did lose my place there for a second, and the point that we were, the point I really wanted to bring up to folks listening and who are looking at the issue and the role of homeless newspapers and the struggles in homeless newspapers, which is a historic role in this country, is a prime example of when the big issue came to LA. When the big issue came to LA back in 96, or excuse me, it was 98.
97.
97 that this happened. Thanks. They were trying again to portray themselves as helping homeless people. They put out a couple of early issues of their paper, and amazingly, within less than 2 months after Levi Strauss laying off something like 3/4 of their American workforce, the big issue ran a two-page center spread ad touting Levi's jeans as cool and hip and supporting the struggle against homelessness. So go out and buy some Levi's jeans and help lay off more workers making a living wage, something of a living wage in America, so that they can be paid the equivalent of what are slave wages in third world countries, even for those countries' economies. And let's be clear about that. That is as evil as killing somebody. If you plant propaganda in a person's mind, you're killing people. And that is propaganda. And if you don't see it, you have no business picking up a pen or a word processor or printing a paper. If you don't know what you're handling, how many wise people in the course of modern human history have pointed out that technology without the wisdom to use it is more dangerous than anything nature's ever thrown at us?
So your point was that even in the foreign countries where people may be getting proportionately able to spend, you know, get more for their money as workers, even though they're paid, you know, much, much less than American workers, it's still not a good deal for them.
Yeah, anybody, there's tremendous, what they call, quote, enterprise zones in places like Nicaragua and El Salvador, where people, 14-year-old, women are working behind barbed wire for major American sportswear manufacturers, 14 hours a day for wages that can't even afford them a roof over their head or to feed their families a week. And there's plenty of information on that on the internet.
So, and I like the way you're sort of embracing the fact that we make mistakes, we come to different decisions. People change their minds about the value of advertising and homeless newspapers, about the wisdom of accepting large corporate grants, or using the model of the big issue to employ more homeless people, to sell more homeless papers, with the inference that this is a good thing because you're, you know, getting more people involved, getting more things done, and your counterpoint that no, you're simply increasing, you know, cotton is king in the slave empire, so to speak.
Absolutely, absolutely. Everything, we're not just a world wired by the internet anymore. We're a world wired by the human net more tightly than we've ever been wound, because we can talk to each other over telephones and over the internet, and we can find ourselves wearing shoes made by somebody on the other side of the planet.